We'll be talking a little bit more about the controversy surrounding Chief Alaniwik on the campus of the University of Illinois and elsewhere. This is a topic that we have covered from a variety of perspectives over really the past few years, actually. And a couple weeks ago, we did a program with several students for Chief Alaniwik. That's a new student group that has been established on the campus of the University of Illinois to speak out in favor of keeping the chief as a symbol of the University of Illinois. And this morning, we'll have a different perspective. We have two guests in the studio with us, and they are Brenda Farnell. She's a member of the faculty of the Anthropology Department here at the University of Illinois. The Anthropology Department recently issued a letter to the University of Illinois Board of Trustees, essentially saying that the chief is harmful to the academic mission of the university and also directly impacts their work as anthropologists. We'll talk a little bit more about that with Brenda Farnell during this hour. Also joining us, Rosemary Blanchard. She is a PhD student in educational policy studies, and her specialty is indigenous education around the world, not just here in the Midwest. And we will talk with them during this hour of the program and get their perspective on Chief Alaniwik. As we talk, we invite you into the conversation. If you'd like to join us around Champaign-Urbana, the number to call, 333-9455. And toll-free anywhere you can hear us, 800-222-9455. Again, within the 217 area code, 333-WILL. And toll-free elsewhere, 800-222-WILL. Well, to both of you, good morning.
Well, thank you.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. And Professor Farnell, maybe I'll start with you and ask you to talk a little bit about what concerns you with regard to Chief Alaniwik, and maybe that'll lead us a little bit in more detail into this the statement on behalf of the anthropology faculty here.
Yes, thank you. Well, as a teacher and an anthropologist, when I first came to this university just 2 years ago, I very quickly began to realize that my job was being made much more difficult by the kind of sentimental attachment that many students have to the symbol. And as I began to talk with my colleagues, we realized that this really was a position that anthropology of all the disciplines should, in fact, take a stand on. So a number of us got together and began to think about the effects this was having on our teaching and on our research. And that was the start of the letter. So we found, first of all, that the symbol is promoting inaccurate information about the peoples of Illinois, both past and present. We found that it was undermining the effectiveness of our teaching and deeply problematic for the academic environment, both inside and outside of the classroom. We also find that it creates a very negative professional relationship in our dealings with Native American communities, and also adversely affects the recruitment of Native American faculty and students into our department and the university generally. Mm-hmm. So these were all affairs that we felt were academic concerns, and we felt that we were moving the debate forward by introducing this as an academic issue, not merely an issue of human rights or racism and so forth.
This statement from the anthropology faculty was issued in February to the Board of Trustees, and it was published elsewhere in the Octopus here, a weekly paper in Champaign-Urbana and elsewhere. This spells out in some detail the reasons for the points that you made. Mm-hmm. You know, and I guess, was this something that was a unanimous statement from the anthropology faculty?
No, it began as a conversation between several or eight of us who got together in our own time to discuss this, and then we presented different versions of what we had to say to our whole department. We took feedback and so forth, and then everyone who wanted to signed that letter.
Okay. There have been subsequently, well, I guess shortly after that, the University of Illinois University Senate passed a resolution urging the Board of Trustees to retire Chief Alaniwik. And we've also seen that several other departments, in fact, I believe 10 other academic departments, have signed on to that, urging the Board. And I'm wondering, has there been any response from the Board of Trustees to either your letter or some of those other statements? You know?
Well, we haven't had any direct contact with the Board of Trustees. We have only seen what's been in the newspapers along with everyone else. We're very heartened that some of the Board of Trustees have taken this as an academic issue affecting the university very seriously and are willing to rethink the issue. We're also very disappointed that Others are rather tranchant and ignoring the ramifications this has for us as an educational institution.
Okay, we'll talk some more about that, but let me bring Rosemary into the conversation. Rosemary Blanchard, you are a student in educational policy studies, and I guess your specialty is Indigenous education. How did you come into this particular issue?
Well, I guess when I say Indigenous education, what I... there is a particular American Indian focus to what I'm doing. I am a older graduate student, and for a number of years I have lived in the southwestern part of the United States, and for 6 years I was a policy analyst with the Navajo Nation in their education division dealing with education matters, and then for 8 years I was on the faculty of a community campus of the University of New Mexico teaching American Indian government, Native American social problems, and things like that in an environment where the majority of my students were Native American. And I wished to look more deeply into the global aspect of the attempts of indigenous peoples, including American Indians, to assert themselves more fully in the education of their children. Initially, I was just looking at the education of their own children, which had been taken out of their hands and had been used actually to undermine their culture. In exploring the issue, since I've come here, I have found it harder to separate the issue of indigenous peoples' efforts to regain control of the education of their own children and the educational implications of how they are portrayed in the larger society of the nation state, because that creates the context in which they are acting as tribal nations in that larger nation state. And they are so often struggling, rather than having their vision of themselves incorporated into the educational life of that larger community, that they are communities within. They are having to struggle against it. And often, even in the education of their own children, they are having to deal at home with the way in which their children have experienced being portrayed at school or on the media. And I would point out, when the children are watching a national collegiate game, they are going to encounter an image of themselves, which their parents are going to be having to deal with when those children go home. So I became more and more aware that I could not just focus on my little question, which is a big question, of American Indians as indigenous people seeking to assert more control over their children's education, but the whole relationship of education in our nation state and its implications for either enhancing the cultural survival or undermining the cultural survival of our indigenous people.
Okay.
And then I began to realize this is going to be difficult for me when I get out in the field to be taken seriously on these issues, when I am going to be associated with a symbol that I would say the majority of Native people I have encountered see as undermining their effort.
Uh-huh. There's a lot we could talk about with regard to the educational, the history of education for American Indians, and we could probably talk for the rest of the hour about this.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder if we could, at least to give people a sort of sense of what it is you're talking about, to sort of review a little bit of the history of this, because I think people may not know too much about the boarding schools and so forth, and some of the ways in which indigenous cultures on this continent were discouraged through the educational system. I wonder if you could talk about that a little bit.
Well, that's, I again, as you say, I don't want to take the hour on this because the issue is certainly what goes on here.
Yeah.
But in fact, you'll find education written into many treaties, and you will think, oh, isn't that good, having hurt these people so much, now we're going to give them education. But it was meant as a continuation of the conquest experience. You will turn your children over to us. We will take them away from you. We will educate them to no longer speak their language and no longer feel at home in the way of life they have come from. We will teach them that their way of spiritual practice is bad. And I think one thing we need to look at in getting back to the Illiniwek controversy, in addition to the impact of the boarding schools and the education for cultural extinction, there was also a series of regulations which the Bureau of Indian Affairs promulgated called the Religious Crimes Regulations, which took Native religious practices and made them illegal. And there are stories in the families of people I have taught about the marshals coming in and trying to break up a shalako ceremony, about the someone spending time in jail, a great-grandfather or a grandfather spending time in jail because of maintaining religious practice. And I think people need to realize that when the native people who object to the Chief Illiniwek situation are talking about how deeply they're offended when regalia that is associated with ceremonial religious practice is used in an inappropriate way by someone who is not a practitioner, that is tapping into all of that pain and injury from the wholesale assault on religious practice, which was mm-hmm. which was a part of their being conquered by us. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and just a quick follow-up on this. How recently were these sorts of, we're talking in the boarding schools and the other sorts of prohibitions against practice of religion and so forth. How recently was this in our history?
Well, there's different manifestations of it, and again, this gets to be very lengthy. There was the religious crimes regulations were finally let go in, I believe, the late 20s or early 30s. Mm-hmm. Certainly, Mr. Collier did not carry them out. However, very recently, our Supreme Court in Smith versus Oregon Department of Employment Security maintained that the religious practice of a member of the Native American Church could be a reason for being fired.
Right.
Because they refused to distinguish between the ceremonial use of peyote in a religious service and drug use. And therefore, I think if you were to talk to Native people, certainly the Native people with whom I have dialogued, they would say that the repression and misunderstanding of their religion goes into this day. Mm-hmm. And within our prison system, Native American practitioners who have wanted to practice their ceremonial religious practice with prisoners in order to help them in becoming whole as a part of their rehabilitation have encountered prejudice against the sweat lodge, against the way in which they practice, and the worst prejudice is saying this isn't religious. If you come in here with a book and read prayers, we will recognize that as religious. If you come in here and chop some logs and heat some rocks and sweat, we're going to say that's something else, so you can't do it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So this is an ongoing problem.
I want to ask both of you, or either of you, to talk a little bit about your own experiences. I mean, we're discussing the idea that Chief Illiniwek impinges upon your academic and professional activities and credibility. And I wonder if you can talk a little bit about any experiences you've had that sort of illustrate this point.
Yes, I think I can speak to that both in the classroom and also doing research. One of the things we're charged with as professionals educating the future citizens of Illinois is providing accurate information. And yet I find that, and my colleagues have found this too, when we try and provide accurate information about Native Americans in the context of stereotyping and cultural oppression and so forth, the Chief Illiniwek symbol prevents any kind of deep reflection on that issue, because what we find is that students wish to retain a romanticized, sentimental view of Native Americans in the past, mm-hmm. and they don't want to confront the rather uncomfortable the rather uncomfortable history that is much more accurate. Mm-hmm. You know, that is, the Native peoples of Illinois were forcibly removed from their homes in this region, that they were subject to execution if they attempted to remain, and that the whole romantic image of the symbol, betrays a lack of awareness of this oppression and a resistance even to considering it as a part of our history. Those kinds of facts, historical facts, are uncomfortable for students to contemplate, because, of course, they contradict the core values of this nation as a place of liberty, freedom, and justice for all people. But when American Indian peoples are excluded from that embrace, as they were in the past and are today, you know, the ongoing struggles over treaty rights and economic issues, educational issues, as Rosemary is pointing out, and political resources and economic resources are contested, then, these are difficult facts for our students to confront. And we find that in the classroom, the image of the chief actually discourages such deeply reflective, critical thinking of our own situation. And we feel that, our students are best taught to understand all sides of this complex history rather than maintaining a romantic view of what that history is about.
Some of the students that I spoke with a couple of weeks ago on this program from the group, the Students for Chief Illiniwek, would say to that perhaps in the past that has been the case, and that some of the abusive practices and the truly objectionable caricatures of Indians and the ways in which Chief Illiniwek have been portrayed in the past have been eliminated, and that indeed we need to continue to make progress to make the chief more of an educational asset to the university. And they use the phrase gateway to understanding. The chief can function as a gateway to understanding Native American cultures. And, you know, they seem very sincere in saying that they would like to do more and that there is a need for more effort in this direction. Do you think, I mean, what's wrong with that? Well, why wouldn't that help?
Well, no, I think those sentiments are very laudable. But, you know, let's look again at the facts involved in the case. If it were true that the presence of the Illiniwek symbol on campus, and it's been here for 70 years, let's remember that. If it were true that that promoted student interest in American Indians, then one would expect to find courses and programs about Native Americans in the courses catalog, right, reflecting this interest. Now, I invite anyone listening to actually go and look at the courses catalog. You will find there are no courses on American and Indian history. There are no courses listed in education, psychology, sociology, religion, healthcare, philosophy, comparative literature, folklore. None of these departments have any courses listed that deal with any issues of concern to Native Americans, past or present. I was interested to look through the offerings in linguistics. And again, as a newcomer to campus, I was looking for what resources supported my own teaching in American Indian languages and cultures. And I noticed that students here have a wonderful opportunity to study all kinds of languages. For example, African languages like Wolof and Zulu and Swahili, and other languages like Hebrew and Hindi. But when I looked for any Native American languages, not a single one. No Navajo, no Cree, no Lakota, none of even the major languages. Of the 250 languages that are spoken just in North America, none of those are offered on this campus. So, again, looking at the facts, where are the courses to support the idea that the presence of the chief, in fact, encourages an interest in Native American studies? It's not there.
Let me just reintroduce our guest this morning. We're talking with Brenda Farnell. She's a professor of anthropology here at the University of Illinois, and Rosemary Blanchard. She is a doctoral student in educational policy studies, and her field is indigenous education. She has been an educator for some time as well, working in schools, serving American Indians. And we're talking about the Chief Illiniwek controversy and how the chief affects the academic mission of the University of Illinois. If you would like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us around Champaign-Urbana at 333-9455 and toll-free elsewhere, 800-222-9455. Rosemary Blanchard, I was going to ask you to,
yes,
you know, if you could relate any experiences that you've had when you were teaching in Native American schools and so forth. Just how do these images, and I suppose there are differences between, for example, the Cleveland Indian logo and Chief Illiniwek and so forth, but, you know, you mentioned that you would observe people's reactions to various ways in which American Indians were portrayed. Did you see any direct sort of reaction to, for example, Chief Illiniwek in this particular case?
Well, I think what I did is, in a class I was teaching on American Indian social problems, one of my students took the question of the representation in the media of American Indians and did an outstanding piece of work on it. And I think, in a way, when we ask the wrong question, we keep getting the wrong or confusing answers. And I'd like to suggest that the issue is not so much what is the particular manner in which the Native person is portrayed, but where do we recognize the locus of control over defining Native peoples, who they are, what is significant about them. And this is where we run into an international human rights issue, as a matter of fact, under the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, which recognizes the right of ethnic minorities to culture and has, in discussions of that before the Commission of Human Rights in the United Nations, has recognized indigenous people as being protected by that right. There was a study that was done on discrimination against indigenous people by a gentleman called Jose Martinez Cobo for the Commission on Human Rights and the Working Group on Indigenous Populations. And one of the things that he said, I just want to quote him very briefly because it's very important in how we look at this. The fundamental assertion must be that indigenous populations must be recognized according to their own perception and conception of themselves in relation to other groups. And here is where I think the problem, we need to look at the problem. It isn't a question of, is Chief Alinawik more dignified than Chief Wahoo or whatever the other, they call that other fellow of the different ones. But the question is, are we appropriating to ourselves as non-Native people the right to define what is an honorable depiction of a Native person? Mm-hmm. And where did we get the right to decide what is an honorable portrayal of a Native person other than by taking it away from Native people with whom it properly belongs? And I don't see any way, no matter how you rearrange the regalia, I don't see any way of getting around that fundamental violation of the rights of all peoples to define themselves.
Mm-hmm. You see, and another point about that, you can't simply tidy up the symbol and ignore the fact that the majority of Native Americans, certainly that I have been in contact with, and Rosemary as well, as well as major national institutions, the National Education, National American Indian Educational Association, and so forth, they are telling us that this is not an honorable symbol. It doesn't matter how much you tidy up it up, it doesn't matter how accurate you make it. The very idea of having someone dressed in Native regalia as entertainment at a sports event is offensive. And it's offensive for many reasons that most non-Native people don't understand. And this is why I say that it affects our academic mission. You can't teach students who are non-Native that this kind of a portrayal is a stereotype unless they understand what is accurate. And from my perspective, you know, what part of that accurate information involves not only understanding how an Illini chief might have been dressed in the 1700s, because he's a historical representation, presumably, but they would also understand that from the Native perspective, the young man portraying the chief hasn't earned the right to wear Lakota military regalia, just as he doesn't have the right to wear a U.S. Marines uniform and a Purple Heart. So it offends that tradition for Native Americans. With accurate information, our students would know that dancing and the wearing of traditional regalia is deeply connected with spiritual beliefs and practices. And so they would understand then why put the chief's performance at an entertainment, as an entertainment at a sporting event, violates those religious sensibilities of many American Indian people. And they would also understand, too, why American Indians are the only recognized ethnic minority in the U.S. who are still subject to this kind of public stereotyping. You know, and this is the kind of deeper thinking we want our students to be doing. Why is it that it's no longer appropriate, say, for African Americans to be portrayed with blackface, or Mexican Americans to be portrayed with, Frito Bandito or whatever he was called? Why is it that only American Indians are still subject to that kind of stereotyping? This is the question people need to be asking. It's not appropriate for any other ethnic minority. Why is it appropriate for American Indians? And I think there are some very interesting historical reasons for that. As Rosemary alluded to, it's about a history, a collective denial of a very uncomfortable history that really hasn't come to the surface yet.
Okay. We have a couple calls to talk with, so let's go ahead and do that. And before we go too much further, I should also mention that Rosemary Blanchard has to leave in about 15 minutes, so I'm sorry we're going to lose her before we run out of time here, but Brenda Farnell will continue to talk with us for the rest of the hour. We have a couple of listeners to talk with. Let's go to someone on line number one. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning.
My family goes back to the time of homesteaders, and that's why I know that about 40 or 50 years ago, maybe even longer, there were some historians who went through East Central Illinois and made histories of all those families. And they were, as I've read some of them, they were very, very scathing about the Indians who were fought to get the land. And that's something that I never really learned about in Illinois history. I think that that's a chapter of Illinois history that just wants to be forgotten, that the homesteaders wanted to be forgotten, and it didn't get into the history books. That's something to look into. We're a land-grant university, University of Illinois. What does that mean? How does that play into this? I think there's a subconscious desire to simply deny the whole history of the homesteaders and the Indians. That could be part of this.
Yes, I agree with you entirely. That is a part of history that hasn't been examined. And as I indicated earlier, for very important reasons, it's an uncomfortable history, but it's one that we really need to come to terms with if our students are going to be adequately equipped to be students of a global community in the future.
But the fact that the basis of the university, what its origins are, as a land grant university. Really rests on the total denigration of the Indians.
May have some
part in the Board of Trustees. Maybe some of their families go back that far, but it may just be something we don't talk about. It's not nice to talk about, you know. That might be another tack that you could follow.
Yes, I think your comments are very very insightful in that regard, and it is absolutely something we need to think about more carefully. You may be interested to know that the very first performance of Chief Illiniwek was an interesting reinvention of history. In 1926, when the very first performance was staged on the football field, there was a little drama that was a part of that, and the University of Illinois was playing the University of Pennsylvania. And at the halftime, what happened was William Penn, a figure represented, dressed as William Penn, came onto the football field and met Chief Illiniwek, and they shook hands, and the band played, and so forth. So it was a wonderful invention of history that played as what I call a feel-good history. It was wiping out the actual facts of the disruptive and dreadful history of the treatment of Native peoples, the wars and so forth that went on. What it did was erase that actual history and create the way in which we would like to think history had been, that Indians and settlers shook hands and we're all happy now, we all get along, and, you know, let's just play this game. And I think that's a very important part of the history, that it was at first a staged drama that was especially designed to eliminate the actual facts of that history, but to create something that we could all feel good about.
Uh-huh. Apologies to the last caller. Our lines are all full, and I want to get on and include as many people as possible. Okay. One quick follow-up, though. One thing that is heard by people who support Chief Illiniwek when we talk about the history of Native Americans in Illinois is that the Illini essentially were driven out and annihilated by other Indian tribes, and that this is one reason why it's okay, perhaps, that you know, we're now portraying the Illini in what we regard as a very dignified manner, and it's not necessarily appropriating any other culture, because that culture was essentially wiped out by other similar cultures of Native Americans. What can you say about that?
Well, again, that's a history that absolves us from any responsibility. Now, certainly, the history books tell us that there was indeed tremendous conflict between Native peoples as well as between settlers and Native peoples. But we also have to realize part of that was exacerbated by the Western movement of non-Native peoples who were pushing groups that were located further east, like the Iroquois and so forth, into Illinois territory. And so there was tremendous competition for resources, and that fueled conflict between Native peoples. Not that it wasn't there before. You know, I don't want to promote a notion of Native Americans that is a romantic stereotype. They, of course, had their wars and disagreements and so forth. But it's inaccurate to suggest that this was somehow their fault and outside of the arrival of Europeans into the area. They certainly weren't wiped out. Disease and intertribal war, as well as wars between settlers and Native people, certainly diminished the numbers until, as far as we can tell, there were only about 150 people from what had been a loose confederacy of about 12 Illinois tribes, and they didn't call themselves this, but outsiders called them the sort of Illinois Confederacy. One of those groups were the Peoria, and the descendants of the Peoria, those 150 remnants, if you like, of the people who were removed from the state of Illinois, now live in Oklahoma. So those are the only direct descendants. But again, as I say, the rhetoric of they wiped each other out, therefore it's not our fault, serves the same function as the drama on the football field between Chief Illiniwek and William Penn. It absolves us from any responsibility.
And it certainly doesn't explain Illiniwek's regalia, which is sort of ersatz Lakota, which no one claims is in any way an authentic representation of how the Illini would have looked when they were living here. So what I see more is, and this is, we need to remember that we are an educational institution, and this, I think, is one of the underminings of our own mission that the anthropology faculty was talking about. We find ourselves, rather than trying to or understandings of an issue, trying to grab onto anything we can say that lets us continue to do what we want to do. Mm-hmm. And that is inconsistent, I would say, with the attitude of open inquiry, which is supposed to be the environment that an institution such as ours would be fostering.
Mm-hmm. And yes, and that is why in the anthropology faculty letter we stress that the symbol in and of itself undermines our teaching, because the sentimental attachment many students hold for the symbol overrides any critical reflection, and so that undercuts our goals as educators to foster the kind of cross-cultural understanding but also critical self-knowledge that is required for citizens of the 21st century who need to live in a global environment.
Mm-hmm. Very good. We have several other callers. In fact, our lines are all full, so let's go on and include some more listeners. Someone on line number two next. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Good morning. First, I want to say that I called in last year and think we should be the Illini Bears or something, or the University of Illinois Bears. Let's just change it. There's plenty of other symbols, and I'm sympathetic. I think we've made some great injustices in our history toward the Native American, and there needs to be restitution. However, there is a couple of comments that have been made that I feel might trump up the case in a way that's maybe not productive. There are all kinds of minorities and people groups in America that are treated unkindly in our media and in our entertainment. It's not right to say that Native Americans are the only group that have this happen. Michael Medved, he is on public broadcasting, has done a video on Hollywood's systematic slandering of Christians, evangelical Christians and Catholics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And case in point, let's take a look at Saturday Night Live and Father Guido Sarducci wearing priest clothing, vestments, and so on, not even authentically, and talking about how Jesus didn't really walk on the water. It was Billy Christ that Jesus was standing on his shoulders, and how you can be your own pope, order a be your own pope kit.
Mm-hmm.
This is, and when people like James Dobson and Focus on the Family talk about, what we find is no one wants to listen to the way evangelicals are characterized on television and in the media.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree entirely. We're not trying to foster the notion that Native Americans are the only people subject to racism and derogatory stereotyping. But I think your comment is very pertinent in that it draws attention back to this as an academic issue. We must ensure that the educated members of our population are sophisticated enough in their thinking to be able to combat this kind of lack of respect for people who are different than ourselves.
Yeah, I agree. We're a mean country in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
Well, the comedians that the university brings to the university, attend some of them, are loaded with mean-spirited attacks on all kinds of people, women.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to run, but the William Penn issue, if I would have been in the stands watching that, what I would have seen is a statement saying, it's a long time since Penn and the Indians battled things out. Things are better today. We want to make peace. It's not a recharacterization of history at all. And I think that there is a desire in a lot of these public ceremonies to, and I'm sure it doesn't reflect reality either, that the restitution hasn't been made, but that desire is being put forth at that moment by those young people in those costumes.
But then if it is, how can we say we're honoring Native people if we refuse to listen to their protests? You know, this again is the issue of respect for, and not only Native Americans, as you say, we're tending towards a very mean-spirited attitude towards any people who are different from ourselves.
I agree.
Yeah. I think, you know, we need to learn, and this is something that our country is learning slowly, actually glacially, I think, and that is we need to learn how to be respectful in an environment in which people are different from each other and in which those differences are not going to be homogenized into one type somewhere along the line. And I see a direct connection between the inability of some segments of our population to see the insult in the portrayal of American Indians by non-Indians in ways that Indians find insulting, and the inability of others in our population to portray Catholic priests and fundamentalist Christians in ways that they would find offensive and not to see the offense in that. We seem to be saying that the real issue is who gets to treat whom that way. And we have not learned to see the issue as treating other groups in that way in the first place. So perhaps there is an educational opportunity in the pain which Chief Alinowick causes to Native people and their courage in expressing that pain to begin to look beyond just the question of the particular image that is and who is it painful to, but the fundamental question of the human wrong, if you will, as opposed to a human right, of taking a group of whom you are not a part and portraying them in a way that they find offensive in a public environment for the entertainment of people like yourself. So I think I'm glad you brought up these other occasions where the same practice is done with another group. It shows how deep our educational effort needs to be on respect in a globally diverse environment.
Well, very good. Our lines are all full. My apologies again to the last caller. I want to move on. And also, Rosemarie, I think you're going to have to leave pretty quick here. So,
oh, dear.
If you can, I don't know if you want to hang on for a few more minutes or... Okay. Well, let's take another call then.
This is hard to leave.
All right. We have a listener on line number three next. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Good morning.
Hi.
As an Anglo, I am deeply conflicted about Chief Alinowick. I remember as a freshman in 1966 watching the dance, and it was the best part of the football game. It's a great entertainment.
Yeah.
But as I've been listening to your conversation this morning, I think I'm coming around more to your way of thinking. I think I'm more offended by the nickname Fighting Illini, maybe even than Chief Alinowick. Maybe the relocated Illini or the defeated Illini or maybe just the Illini. I do think it's important, though, for us to try to keep a sense of place and people that have been here before us. But I'm more offended by the nickname Fighting Illini, I think, than probably anything else. It's a very dramatic dance. It could serve as a gateway, I suppose, although listening to your conversation doesn't seem like it is.
No.
And I've always felt that, you know, he was more of a, like you said, a plains costume rather than a prairie woodland tribe. I'm living along the banks of the Illinois River in Peoria, so I don't know. It's a knotty problem. I wish you well with it. I'll hang up and listen to your comments.
Well, thank you for your comments,
thank you for your
openness. As you say, an inaccurate representation is really problematic. You know, it's as we said in the anthropology faculty letter. You know, it's the direct equivalent of representing Italians or Germans with someone dressed in a Scottish kilt playing the bagpipes, or Polish people being represented by a Russian Cossack. You know, these things are offensive to people who are, as Rosemary said, being represented outside of any consideration of their feelings about this. But it is a knotty issue. I think you're right. There is an extremely important connection to land and history that is embodied in the symbol. But I think we could find other symbols that would do this without stereotyping any particular ethnic group. Let's make it a history that we can all be a part of and which unites everyone who is here on campus, rather than excluding one ethnic minority. And the Native American students on this campus and the Native people in the state certainly do not feel welcome on this campus.
And this will have to be my last comment, alas, but I think, you know, we need to look at and acknowledge the fact that without in any way recognizing that the appropriation of a Native identity was in fact culturally offensive to Native people, and in fact contributed to the denigration of their culture in our larger environment, without meaning to do that at all. Many people drew a great deal of pleasure from going to a game and seeing a Linowick in that sort of before knowledge phase, and I think we don't need to beat ourselves up about things like that. Those activities that people engaged in with their families, in the open air, that gave them pleasure, those are good memories of good moments. And the question now is, now that we have come to a level of understanding that there are other families that are hurt deeply by this portrayal, and the Native American women who have been students here with small children have particularly talked about the harmful effect on their children of the environment that this creates, now that we see there are other families that are hurt by this, what I think is the best way to protect those precious memories that people have of themselves is not to hang on to it in a different context, in a different climate, but to say that felt really good then, knowing what I knew and not knowing what I didn't know, and I'm glad for the time I spent with my family and friends and for the warm feeling we had. Now I want to create an environment where families can sit in that warm feeling here and now. If Chief Olenewicz stands in the way of that for some of the families of our community, then let us find a symbol that we can all join behind, and we can again innocently sit with our family without having that innocent pleasure undermined by the fact that some people are deeply injured by the particular symbol that we've used. So I don't think there's a need to in any way denigrate memories that we have that are pleasurable to us and that are of times that we strengthened our tie of family and community. Now, I, alas, do have to go.
Okay. Well, Rosemary Blanchard, thank you very much. You have another engagement, we understand. Thanks for talking with us. We will continue on for another 10 minutes or so with Brenda Farnell, professor of anthropology here at the University of Illinois. We're talking about the Chief Olenewicz controversy and the impact of Chief Olenewicz on the academic mission of the University of Illinois. Our lines are full, so I want to make sure we go ahead and include as many people as possible before we're out of time.
I just wanted to add one thing. I think the previous caller raised a very important issue about emotions and the way in which the presence of Chief Olenewicz is very emotionally stirring, and how that's what people remember. It's a very positive experience, as Rosemary said, for families to hang on to. But again, when we reflect upon the ways in which those kinds of emotions can be manipulated for good or manipulated for bad, like traditions, you know, one has to evaluate those in context. And, you know, for example, we know that all kinds of political and religious leaders can stir up that kind of emotion. Now, leaders like Martin Luther King did it to extremely positive effect. But we also know that leaders like Hitler or Mao Zedong and so forth stirred up exactly those same kinds of mass emotions for very negative purposes. So, again, I would ask supporters of the chief to just think about whether the source of their positive emotion is in fact one, as Rosemary said, that is now a legitimate concern, given that we know this is offensive to Native Americans.
Okay. Well, let's go on and talk with some more listeners. Next up, someone on line number one. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Oh, hello. I've forgotten my number. Is that me?
That's you, yes.
Okay. I just wanted to say I barely want to take your time because it's such a wonderful program, and both your participants have expressed what I, as a layperson, have felt and been unable to articulate, and I thank you. This is wonderful. I hope it's being taped. I hope the Board of Trustees sits and listens to it over and over. You have covered so many issues that and covered them so well, particularly these latter ones about the sort of visceral effects of the chief and so on. And I'm astonished that alumni who are articulate and sophisticated, mature adults, persist in saying they will not send money to this university if the chief goes and so on. Could you address something like that as well? I find it just wonderful. I want to see the letter from the Department of Anthropology and etc. And I'll get off the line and listen.
Okay. Well, thanks for the call.
Thanks. Yes, thank you. And I'd be very pleased to send you a copy of that letter if you contact me personally. One of the things anthropology, I think, brings to this issue is an attempt to understand both sides of the story. And, you know, one thing we do understand is that for many alumni, the symbol doesn't, in fact, in many ways, represent Native Americans. What it symbolizes for them is their commitment to the university. Symbol that for them represents the wonderful times they had here as an undergraduate or graduate student. And so we can find other symbols that will promote those same kinds of feelings. And I don't undermine the importance of those feelings. It's very important for an institution to have symbols that unite people in that way. But we have to be very careful about the way we choose those symbols. And I'd like to just say a word about tradition. You know, traditions are very important, of course, and as an anthropologist, it's something I study very carefully. But traditions in and of themselves are not always honorable. And what we find here is when times and moral sensibilities change, we often have to change the symbols that we are attached to. And I think this is where we are at now with this particular symbol. So I would love to hear from people who have ideas about a new symbol for the University of Illinois that would do all those things that supporters of the chief want the symbol to do. But what we need now, of course, is a symbol that unites the campus. Right now, we have a symbol that divides, and that does not make for an effective campus community, and it doesn't make for an effective symbol any longer.
Well, very good. We have several other callers waiting, and just about 6 minutes left during this hour. We'll go on and include as many people as we can. Next, listener on line number two. Good morning. You're on Focus 580. Is there a caller there?
Yes. Hello?
Yes, that's you.
Yes. Good morning. If I just might briefly address one of the last caller's statement about alumni support. It should be noted that in discussions with 10 other institutions that have made similar changes over the past 30 years, mm-hmm. we've really learned that any negative response from alums or local community was always short-lived, and this is especially true when the leadership from the top was strong. And unfortunately, that's one of the problems in dealing with this, that we haven't had strong leadership forthcoming on the campus. Moreover, what I want to say, I've been following your programs, and in the last week, there were some very appropriate retrospects on Paul Robeson and on Dr. Mm-hmm. Martin Luther King. And I just have a feeling that they would be much more taken with people in the community actually not paying homage to them, but getting out and actually doing the work that they started. Mm-hmm. And one suggestion that I have is that WILL actually follow their lead and discontinue the reference to the term fighting Illini when they're referring to university athletic teams. In view of what the students and faculty have voted in the Senate, it seems that there's no rationale for continuing that, and certainly what we heard from your guests today, there's, you know, there's a great deal of rationale not to do that. So I'm asking WILL to join in now, not just report history, but participate in the making of history.
Okay. Well, I hear your comments, and you know, I'm sure that'll be something we'll discuss.
Well, I hope that you relate that to the people who actually make those discriminations, because you too have a role to play, and I appreciate the role that you're playing today in, you know, in dealing with this issue. But you can actually be doing much more. If I may make one other comment,
sure.
And that is, there really is quite a bit of hypocrisy on the part of the Board of Trustees, because their past policies, which are part of the actual code that our students follow, and I quote, stipulates that we all have a commitment to foster programs within the law which will ameliorate or eliminate, where possible, the effects of historical societal discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
And what we find that the board doing is, instead of acting to ameliorate or eliminate historic societal discrimination, they're actually choosing the opposite path. So I'd hope that your listeners realize this kind of hypocrisy. We can't expect our students to behave in one way where the board is behaving in quite the opposite way. And I think the actual public now needs to get in touch with the board and let their opinions be known.
Thank you for the call.
Yes, thank you for your comments. I think it's very interesting. I think we have a fundamental contradiction. You know, the UIUC wants to promote itself justifiably as an outstanding, world-class educational institution. And there are certain fundamental responsibilities that go with that in terms of promoting a climate of inclusivity and diversity so that all peoples of the world can feel welcome here on this campus. But there seems to be a contradiction between that responsibility and that image of the university and the desire on the part of the Board of Trustees to maintain a very local sort of loyalty to an outdated mode of representation that has symbolized the university in the past. And I hope they will give some serious consideration to the fundamental responsibility that certainly the faculty are very concerned about, and that is our reputation as a world-class institution versus this very local notion of how we should be portraying ourselves.
Mm-hmm. We just have about a minute and a half left. I'm sorry to say there are two other callers I won't be able to include in the discussion, but we will continue this topic at another time. I can promise you that. Just as a way of wrapping up, and we've seen a lot of activity recently. Just this past weekend, there was a conference on the campus sponsored by some student groups and some American Indian groups on the elimination of racist mascots, as they describe
mm-hmm.
Chief Lanawick and so forth. There have been a number of university departments that have come out and urged the Board of Trustees of the university to retire the chief, the vote of the Faculty Senate, the letter from the Anthropology Department, and so forth. And the board, in its hearing, I believe, yesterday, or the day before, I may be getting my days mixed up here, there was a public comment period where a number of students urged the board to consider these issues and to engage in dialogue, and the board has simply said that we're not going to really talk about it right now anymore until there's something new. I guess as a way of wrapping up, you know, what do you think is going to happen, or what would you like to see? What would you hope to see happen?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. It's very distressing at a democratic institution to find that people who we look to for moral leadership on these kinds of issues, instead of responding to new information from faculty and students, in fact, close the door to any dialogue. That's very, very disturbing, and I would hope that those members of the Board of Trustees who are willing to rethink this issue will try to enlighten their colleagues on this issue, that it is something that affects us academically, and that they have a responsibility to promote our interests as a world-class institution.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there since we're here at the end of our time.
Thank you.
And I'm
much.
Sorry, there's much more we could talk about. But anyway, we'll stop there. Brenda Farnell, professor of anthropology here at the University of Illinois, has been our guest. And leaving us just a little bit before the end of the program, Rosemary Blanchard, who is a doctoral student in educational policy studies. And thanks very much for being here.
Thank you very much.